And if you complete the challenge in under 30 minutes,
you
could become a certified VIP
Big Daddy.
And make sure to check out the Johnny's Beef and Euros app. Just text the word BEEF to 33733 to download. Again, that's BEEF to 33733 to download the app, and you will receive $2 off your first order of $15 or more. To find out more about the Big Daddy Challenge, along with the menu, visit north.johnnys-beef.com. This message is brought to you by Johnny's Beef, a proud sponsor of Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection.
Good morning, Scrawl Nation. Today is Friday, May 10th, and this is Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection. You're listening to Scrawl Radio, hurried but well-considered thoughts by writers for writers, brought to you by the University Center for Writing-Based Learning, a.k.a. the Aquaville. I'm your host, Riley O., joined by my co-hosts, Katie A. and Gia Z., and our wonderful guest today, Sam Waterhouse.
We love Sam.
Hello, Sam.
Yay. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on. Today, we are talking about fantasy writing and world building. Now, Sam, you have a bit of expertise in this area, right?
Yeah, so I mostly do world building and fantasy writing in the context of Dungeons and Dragons, but I also do a little bit of personal writing on the side.
Heck yeah, that I love. And if you are dedicated fans to Scrawl Radio, you would know me and Gia also love D&D.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
So we're going to have some fun talking about what kind of writing goes into playing D&D. And what kind of writing goes into fantasy as like a genre itself, and what kind of tones build that up.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question that I want us to address is, what is like world building itself? It's not necessarily a ubiquitous term.
Mm-hmm.
So what do y'all know about it?
Well, I think Katie and I know the least.
I would definitely say I know the least of this group.
However, I do know just from like absorbing the media of my time that world building is, as it says, building worlds. but like in the context of fantasy writing, it's fantasy writing, but it's like so much more than that, because there has to be this kind of like whole ecosystem of creations and like, you know, a lore. We can get a lore, I guess.
Yes.
And, you know, politics and like, it's a whole thing. It's a complicated thing.
Yeah.
I think a good way to understand a genre, or to begin to understand one, is to, especially when you don't know about it, is to look at a list of things that are within that genre and then see kind of what they all share. So I did that. I looked up fantasy films, fantasy books.
Oh, yeah?
And
Ooh.
What it seems like is, you know, there's something supernatural going on in all of these. There's some power that doesn't really exist in our real actual Ooh. World. So it's got to be a different one. And you have to, you know, build those conventions so that everything checks out and that there's a certain canon that's being followed. Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can't have, like, magic in your world without severe ramifications for
the infrastructure
of that
world.
Yeah, you got to set up some rules. Hell yeah. Sam, in your D&D experience, what is world building to you? What do you go into, like, creating? Do you make your own like worlds for D&D?
Yeah, so I can completely like from the ground up create my worlds, and that's sort of what attracted me to D&D in the first place.
Weird flex, but okay.
other than being a player, but being a dungeon master running my own game, the appeal of it was to create a world. A lot of it has to do. Usually when I create a world, I have three right now that I'm working on.
Oh, three whole worlds.
Three whole worlds.
But they start as a sort of a large outline.
Yeah.
When it comes to just like...
putting it on paper.
Yeah, putting it on paper, getting it down, and then
getting
flesh
some
out
set
ideas
rules.
Down there. Yeah, so a set of rules, generally like what geographically my world looks like. Mm-hmm. And then I usually start with like landmarks of a world.
Ooh. Oh.
So that could be geographical locations, like maybe a mountain that's really important, or large cities. Mm. And then when I have sort of points to go off of, I delve deeper and just get more specific as I go.
Ooh, okay. So you kind of like start with the physical world, that like whole like grounding point, and then kind of build like cultures and societies like off of those?
Yeah, yeah. The physical definitely the physical part of my world influences a lot of the things that I put in it.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
And I love that you started like this conversation with talking about like outlines and like process, because like at the Aquaball, here at the Aquaball, we know there's no like universal process to doing things. And especially when you're doing something this complicated, I think, as someone who has like a lot of preemptive anxiety, like approaching projects and stuff, I think the planning for this kind of thing would be so stressful for me. So I'm glad that you have like a way that you do it that I guess reduces that.
It's scalable, no? I mean, you're building a whole world, so I feel like there's a lot of steps and you can, you know, kind of take a step back and look away and revisit it. And I think that'd be essential with such a big task.
Yeah, it's also just outlining it and creating a world is actually a very calming thing for me. And it might seem like a big project, but it's definitely like...
But it's for fun.
It's sort of... It's definitely just a way where you can sit down and create, and there's not any bounds to it. Mm-hmm. Like, in other writing, especially, or even just in fantasy writing in general, if you're writing a story versus building a world, you still have to sort of follow specific guidelines and context. Mm-hmm. And when you make a world, you make that.
You
make the context, and you don't have to necessarily follow any sort of structure in the creation of it. How you want to tell the story of the world is a whole different thing.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. I feel like so at peace when I'm just like creating a world. And I think it's interesting that Gio, you said like there's no universal process because
is there a universal process? I'm actually wrong.
No. I say like my process of creating a world, I kind of tend to go, or at least I have a couple of times gone from like the like internal, like I go from like a specific city or a specific town, build a like society within that and expand from that. I go to this like local zone, and then generate like different branching societies and towns to like then plan like commerce between them, and then go into geography from that, which may not get as much of an influence on like those societies as your method. Which I think is really interesting. Those like different ways of building a world can really influence the world itself.
Sam is eco-based.
Ooh, yeah.
An eco-based builder.
Yeah.
I'm a PR major.
Yeah, I think that also comes into play with fantasy writing. I'm thinking of like Lord of the Rings, where Tolkien was very into like history and also language, and like there's I was rereading it, but what was the first book
Hobbit.
In the no not the Hobbit oh. but the first in the trilogy,
help me,
ooh.
The Two Towers. Yeah, the it's a, Fellowship.
Yeah, I think that's it. The Fellowship of the Ring
is the first one.
And there's such
not well versed.
Yeah, no, clearly I am not either. But there's a huge section of it that's just dedicated to like history and like kind of politics. And so that's kind of one of your first forays into the world. And that clearly, I think, influences the like. Social dynamics, like the like intro to like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, is that like hold there were like this many rings and they went to these people, that like historical foundation, and I think that's really cool how that influences a world itself. Do you find that I wonder how do you like generate geography? Do you just think off the dome, like, this would be cool?
Yeah, kind of. And that definitely, like, plays into sort of, like, the, I think in the beginning process, I don't want to speak for everybody here, but definitely for me, in the beginning of a world-building process, it's definitely sort of childlike and just, like, I want a big mountain. Like, this is going to start with a big mountain and, like, go from there. So it's very much off the top of, like, what's an interesting physical landmark. Mm. And especially in the context of, like, going deeper, a lot of it, I think about landmarks just, like, in normal society.
Real life context.
Influences what's built there and the cultures that live there. So that has a big part of it, too, of, like, what... If I'm thinking of sort of these large landmarks or sort of just regular geographic areas, what's going to happen in there? Why do I need this in my world? And like, how is it going to influence the context of my players, I guess, in, because most of it is D&D.
I love that.
I have a question about moving away from like landscape and nature, just because like obviously that is such a huge part of world building. Like for those of us who've seen Game of Thrones, that frickin' map in the beginning, amazing.
Yeah, I love that.
my favorite part, and then you're like screaming along to the theme.
Yes.
But
I love any book that has a map at the start.
Oh my god, and you're flipping back to the map and you're
like,
where
like, oh
is
my
it?
God.
Mm-hmm. So obviously like landscape is important and it is really essential to whatever, you know, quest I guess you're trying to set up. But there's also a lot more context in world building outside of D&D as well, especially like in just literature like, you know, Tolkien, or even if we want to bring it in like Harry Potter or whatever. There's a lot of discussion about like the infrastructure of the people who live there and the like we were talking about this earlier, like culture,
society,
the politics, like I've always thought that politics and like writing about or making up your own form of politics, I guess, within world building is really an interesting concept, kind of like the ministry, if you will, in Harry Potter, and how they're like, this is how we rule wizards, like that's something you got to think about.
That's true. And I do love, like, one of the things that I love about world building is that it kind of, like, forces you as a writer to become an expert in
everything.
And it also lets you, like, dive in, like, bring in your passion. Like, Tolkien was a language nerd, so he made a whole language and put that into his stories.
Which
I love that.
A whole
like,
other thing, like... Wild. Like,
yeah, right?
Create languages. Dothraki.
Conlangs are incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I love world building because it lets you do what you want. It gives you that freedom. And at the same time, asks of you to really think about, like, a whole world.
Yeah, when I was thinking, you mentioned a little bit earlier about Tolkien and his, like, emphasis on history. And when I was thinking initially about this genre, I was like trying hard to differentiate it from sci-fi, which I was able to do. I think like in sci-fi, like these things happening, you know, in the near future, they could happen. But with all these fantasy titles and like fantasy I'm familiar with, you know, a lot of them happened, you know, in a time that seems far away in the past. You know, when I think of Game of Thrones or like The Hobbit, I'm like, you know, these are ancient times. So,
Yes, so, the time of Westeros and dragons, America's fave.
And they're definitely not things that could happen. You know, they're kind of like far-fetched. Let your imagination go anywhere. So I feel like this is a genre with, like, you know, the bounds are very broad.
I love that. Yeah.
Then the emphasis on history and that, to me, I can't really find the link, but I think it's very connected.
No, yeah. I love that idea. Fantasy is kind of a what if in the opposite direction. But yeah, there's a huge, very clear like influence in modern fantasy. You see it a ton in D&D and in like Game of Thrones about like kind of medieval fantasy or like archaic kind of fantasy. And I think there's something really interesting about that, which kind of shows something about how the real world influences fantasy.
Yeah.
Sam, do you find that like you're basing some of your world, some of your characters or anything off of real world stuff or taking inspiration from stuff?
Yeah, most of my like infrastructural creations are based off of real like types of government or structures and stuff like
oh,
that.
Yeah?
So like yeah.
Yeah, do you like I think I tend to like to gravitate towards like monarchies or like less like democratic based systems because I think I can put like dynamic characters into it.
Yeah.
But I like to base that off of like as best I can what monarchies and what like dictatorships and stuff have been like in real life. And that kind of inspiration I think is really interesting. Some fantasy worlds have different emphasis of different like inspirations. I know there's a particular like brand of fantasy that is talked about in like the D&D like official books. I think it's called Wuxia or Wuxia. And it's particularly like Japanese fantasy, that kind of like samurai like figure that can really color your whole fantasy with heavy, heavy influence and inspiration from real life.
And then in that case, you're kind of building your, or you could world build off of like characters.
Yeah. Oh. That's a big thing for me as well.
Yeah. You want to chat about that?
Yeah, so right now I, the world that I'm probably most involved in building at this point is for my present D&D campaign. And it,
ooh, do you have a name for it?
Yeah, it's the, I don't want to, hopefully none of my players are listening.
I don't think they are. I think you're fine there.
Sam's players.
It's called Grumon the Grizzly is the title of the campaign.
Ooh.
Ooh. Say that one more time into the mic.
It's called Grumon the Grizzly.
Love that.
Alliterative. Yeah, so. We at the Writing Center appreciate.
Yeah, I do love alliteration. yeah, and it's the political structure of that the characters are most interacting with. There are several different ones in the world. Is an oligarchy, and it's very much based off of like I created. Is it? Did I use oligarchy?
I'm wondering.
Oh, I don't know,
that's
honey.
Like a small group
that's
of
okay.
people that
that's
control
a,
everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a, it's like a so it's like
it's
a
like
council
a posse
of
that yeah.
It's based off of religion. So I created this character, ooh. And then I created a religion based off of like what I wanted his character to do.
Ooh.
And then
wow, this is
I like
involved.
Built the government structure from there.
Wow. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, creating a religion is fun, by the way.
Oh, because you're God? That is always fun.
Oh, yeah.
So you're building this for your players, right? As an author, as a creator here, as God, is it, I mean, people are going to do what they will with it, right?
Mm.
So you have all these plans, right? And you created this very intentionally. Is it ever tough to like kind of let it go into the hands of others after it's like your baby?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is so tough. It's a huge like problem as a dungeon master. Well, not necessarily problem, but like issue that you have to face where like you're going to create things. You're going to create like the world and you're going to create plot lines so that things are interesting and players are very chaotic. I've been a master to many groups with many, many chaotic leanings. And it's hard to balance that kind of thing. I think especially a way to balance that is to create a lived-in world where they can go to different places and do cool different things. Sam, do you have that kind of issue?
Yeah, absolutely. There's always this sort of tension in me of wanting my players to interact with the world fully and wanting them to interact with what I've specifically planned for them.
Mm.
And when they're, yeah, inherently while I'm creating... especially when I'm working on my campaign that I'm running now, I'm sort of creating for the players and I'm like, oh, this is incredibly interesting. And then for the worlds that I have on my back burner, it's more of a like just sort of a creation for myself. But it's definitely like there's always a tension of wanting to push your players to do what you have planned, and then wanting to, because part of building an effective world is allowing it, characters to explore it.
Yeah, ooh, that's so real.
I think that's a great place to stop and do our first song break.
Yeah, that, nice. I learned a lot from that.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about fantasy, and to effectively celebrate that, you're going to be hearing Fantasy by Mariah Carey.
Welcome back, Skrull Nation. This is Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection, and you're listening to Skrull Radio. So, me and Sam were chatting during the break about urban...
Sorry for yelling at you. It's excited for radio!
No, we want the listeners to get in on this.
Yeah,
so we were talking about a really cool thing that I see a lot in, like, D&D, but it's has a less, I think, monumental presence in popular culture, and that's mm-hmm. like urban fantasy. And that, if you don't know, is like fantasy. It's magical. It's something different from
is that
our
Harry
world.
Potter?
Kind of, but Harry Potter, I think, takes place a lot in like Hogwarts, right?
Yeah, which is chocolate term. Factory.
Kind of.
Grandparents are sleeping on that one bed. That is urban.
That's a pretty good example.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, something fantastical within an urban world. I like to think of urban fantasy as like something fantastical, something magical that has shaped the city itself, something that like you can go to like the like wizard's skyscraper or something like that.
Love that.
And like something where magic is ingrained in like the society in really cool ways. Mm-hmm. Have you had experience with urban fantasy?
Yeah, my world right now is almost completely, well, the world itself is not urban fantasy, but the emphasis on the story and the plot of the world right now is in urban fantasy, and I think it's so exciting.
Heck
to
yeah.
build an urban fantasy setting. For me, it's less about, well, I like that you were talking about creating a city where magic influences sort of the creation of it. But I like sort of there's something really interesting to play into a fantasy setting that doesn't
Like move too far from our own.
Yeah, there's sort of a monotony of like urban life that is really interesting to me to put in a fantasy setting.
Ooh, yeah. The monotony of urban life. Yeah,
yeah, we're getting big words here.
yeah. So, like, do you like kind of like an urban world that's very similar to our own that maybe like only like recently has like magical elements introduced, or like the development of it has somehow become like parallel to our own?
Yeah, I think I create a lot of my city's like social structures based on like the social structures that I observe now, just in life. Magic doesn't necessarily play like a super huge role in the development in the city, just because I'm more attracted to the idea of having it be sort of just a thing that exists inherently in the, I guess, the specific world. It's always just been a thing. So it when people use it in an urban setting, it's just sort of, it's as if they're just doing something normal. It's not a super large, like magic isn't a secretive or
monumental,
like exclusive thing in my world.
Ooh.
So it's very much just people. I like urban fantasy setting because I like the idea of people just going about their lives with the ability to do like fantastic things.
Yeah, the normalcy of magic. Ooh, I love that so much. Mm-hmm. That I think is like super unique and very different from a lot of the fantasy that we usually see. And I think that's a super cool thing to explore. I think fantasy in like our popular culture definitely has that kind of differing tone, that differing like move where like, ooh, something is super magical. Like, I haven't seen Game of Thrones, but I imagine like the first time there's a dragon there, it's like,
it's a whole thing.
My God,
it's a whole thing.
It's a dragon.
Yeah, everyone freaks out because they're like, we haven't seen it in like 1,000 years. and like the actual like birthing of dragons, it's like, ooh, it's an egg, it's in a fire, and then suddenly they're like tiny dragons and everyone's like,
yeah,
so
it's something like super incredible and like
it's a big deal.
Fantastic.
Is, yeah, yeah.
And I think it's interesting. We talked about, I brought in lore a little bit in the beginning of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sam is doing his like excited like hands. He like so weird, like
touching the
he does like a Mr. Burns like excellent thing. But I think that a lot of that fantasy and a lot of that like normalcy of magic and stuff, if you will, comes a lot from whatever you make like the lore or like general history of like wherever you're saying, because like for example, Game of Thrones, their whole thing is like, a long time ago, like, this family had dragons, and they're the only family that had dragons, or the dragon family, and it's, like, you know, and they rule everyone because they have these dragons, but then their, like, family falls, and they, like, kill all the dragons, and so there's no more dragons, but then the dragons come back. Yeah, that's really, and it's, like, a big deal.
That reminds me a lot of, like, Skyrim. And I wonder how, like, ubiquitous that kind of, like, fantasy story is, if that's maybe a little trite or cliche, where, like, there are no dragons.
There are no dragons. There were dragons. There are no dragons.
The dragons return.
Exactly.
I think any kind of, like, I think that's pretty much the basis of, like, a lot of fantasy things, like, moving away, maybe even moving away from dragons. It's like, there was a thing, the thing is no more, the thing is back.
Yeah. Like, an old world, but not an, not a, like, a dying world.
Yeah.
Like, something that's archaic. There's, like, old unexplored ruins.
Yeah.
It's like Voldemort.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, he's gone.
Yeah, Voldemort.
Not. I'm on the back of some dude's head.
Voldemort is the Harry Potter dragon, even though there are dragons in Harry Potter.
I love that.
And, you know, I think it's also a thing, like, in Harry Potter, like, the first thing we, like, see with Voldemort is, like, this guy, like, drinking unicorn blood.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, but it's Voldemort. He's gotta drink unicorn blood.
And everyone has, like, a common understanding.
Yeah, of, like,
it's just the way he has to do
it's
it.
It's like, oh, yes, yes, he the unicorn blood consumption. Yeah, that definitely does a thing. Like,
I do love the, like, ubiquity of that kind of knowledge. Like, but that's also why I love the freshness of, like, imagining just, like, a dragon living in a normal city. Like, a dragon shows up in New York, and it's just chill. You know, that's how it is.
Hanging out.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think that additionally, oh no, I'm losing it. No, I have
to. Oh, the thought. The thought is gone.
Was I just talking about dragons and, like, Harry Potter and he's eating unicorn blood and lore?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that there is a conversation about how maybe arbitrary, like, these kinds of, like, pieces of lore are, because, like, we all know, like, JK is receiving some flack.
Oh, yeah.
For
filling
her,
in black.
Yeah, filling it, filling in her lore after the fact and being like,
oh, are you talking about the character history?
Like, yeah.
JK's actually, like, yeah.
Particularly, like, it's, like, for those of you who don't know, you probably know it's controversy that stand up when she was like, Dumbledore is gay, but you don't see that in the text.
Yeah.
And she did that for a few other characters as well.
It seems like it's up to her many, many, you know, readers and viewers to kind of place their own, you know, identities and interpretations on the characters. That's what makes fantasy fun, right? So it's like, JK, you don't need to tell me about.
I think JK Rowling and the Harry Potter, like, fantasy world is really interesting from a world-building perspective, because she created sort of this, like, really... because it happens within the context of normal, like, present-day society.
It's on the other side of that train wall.
Yeah, she created this really sort of exclusive fantasy society where everybody sort of has a ubiquitous knowledge of what happens.
Yeah.
And
she,
like, created a very small world, but because everybody has a knowledge of everything that goes on, like, all the time, it really makes it seem like this sort of large scale thing, when in reality she, like, didn't she didn't flesh out a whole lot of lore. She doesn't she doesn't give like necessarily a really strong, like, clear history
of the history of the wizard, but she uses
her characters to just introduce lore points that everybody that happened.
Yeah, I would say there's like a general basis of it where she's, you know, it's like the Hogwarts, like, five wizards or whatever.
Yeah, the, like, four founders.
Yeah, and they're like the wizard gods, I guess. They're like, I guess never mind. They're just like the wizard gods. I actually, you know what? Yeah, looking back, I don't know a whole lot about Harry Potter history. But
that is a fair point, though. Like,
but there's tidbits.
Yeah, there is history that she provides. Although I think you're right too, Zan, there are, like, limits to that. Like, it's only, I don't know how old Hogwarts is, but, like, probably only like a couple of thousand years in my mind, right? Like, it's
only
not
a couple
like
thousand.
That's
a long time.
I mean, that's pretty old.
It's pretty old.
But if magic existed, like in the whole human history, what happened before that?
Are we talking like back in dinosaur times?
Exactly. So there's limits to that, like depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what strikes me, like if we're talking about Tolkien, he provides a lot of historical context outside of the story.
That's true.
Yeah. And Rowling really... JK. I feel like we're on a first name basis.
I think if we're criticizing her, we can say JK.
Yeah, that's my really goal. Gives context using characters and using her plot line.
That also, kind of like incorporating lore through other aspects.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about writing, consider your audience. It's also, I mean, everyone reads Harry Potter, but it is kind of aimed, you know, for tweens and, you know, young people. And
young adult.
They not... necessarily value that as much, you know?
That's very true.
Yeah. I'm not in no ways trying to criticize. Trying to highlight the difference.
No, please criticize.
JK Rowling, your kids' books are bad.
The Skrull's all about hot takes.
Hot takes.
The hot take is I actually don't like Harry Potter.
My only experience with Harry Potter was in third grade in Miss O'Connor's class. We read the first one on tape during like busy work time. And we got so far. We were like three chapters done and I was pretty hooked. And then this kid, I'll shout out because I know Doan and Dearborn, Michigan's listening, with Bustamante's mom, was really Christian and said, I will absolutely not have my kid knowing how Harry Potter ends. And
oh my God.
I never finished that book and I'm 20 years old now.
I was going to say the audiobook too, listening to Jim Dale do all that. Love Jim Dale.
That's like one of my oldest memories, like having it on cassette.
I think that's also like a conversation we could have is like when you're reading fantasy literature or audiobooks and you have someone reading to you, there I noticed this little conversation in their like planning sheet and I was like, you want to talk about that? but like a lot of fantasy has a very specific jargon and like tone to it that I think like yes you need to like be able to sympathize and like empathize with to provide like an accurate feeling of fantasy.
Yes, you need that great fantastical move.
Yeah.
I definitely
Merlin's beard. Like that's all I think of when I think of fantasy is like silly
archaic
like
terms.
Exclamations like that. Like
forsooth.
Yeah, exactly.
I Sam, definitely sorry, no.
No, it's okay. Sam, when you do like D&D, and I know this happens because Sam and for our listeners. Sam and I are roommates and whenever he hosts D&D, I'm sometimes home and I can just hear like from the other end of the hall, like you're coming up on like a lagoon. do you have like a D&D voice and like
I have a D&D voice. My language changes dramatically. Also changed like how my voice sounds, but I do a big deep voice and like
got a stance.
Because you're the master.
Yeah,
Sam is a dungeon master.
DM.
Some more lore. Sam was in a campaign of mine back in high school.
We all went to high school.
Sorry, Katie. It's Skyline Squad.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
You also like change your physicality and like tone with that. And there's something really cool about how specifically everyone adopts that fantasy vibe.
I'm a strong believer in voicing and like physically acting out characters in a D&D setting.
Yeah.
Because I think it enhances one the dramatic aspects of a character, but also it's a good way to make your character or make your players feel like they're in a world.
Yeah.
Because part of one of the interesting parts of world building in D&D is that because your characters are interacting with it, it's constant, and as a DM, you're like there's not a time where you're not building the world. So you really have to like be on your toes in creating like an immersive environment, and I think voices have so much like
influence.
Influence in like creating a character.
That is so real. I can't just like, my players can't just go into a shop and they're like, hi, I'm Jeff. What's up? You're going to buy some health potions? Cool.
Yeah.
You got to have something. You got to have something that takes them kind of out of their, out of the real world into the fantasy world. And I love that like uniqueness of it. Awesome. That was a very fun discussion. I think it's about time for our second break. So we're going to jump into that. I hope you all enjoy Cosmic Love by Florence and the Machine. A falling star fell from your heart and landed in my arms. I screamed aloud as it tore through them. It's left me blind. The stars, the moon, they have all been gone out. You left me in the dark. No dawn, no day. I'm always in this twilight, in the shadow of your heart. Welcome back, Skrull Nation. We have just had a really nice episode on fantasy and world building. I think there's a lot of this discussion that we can just talk about for like days on end. Are there any final thoughts or final like questions that y'all have
As we've discovered in this episode, I'm the one who knows nothing about this. So I will say, like, my only real exposure to D&D came this week in my ethics class. Shout out Sherwin Leff. I know some of us in the booth have had him. Most of his class is showing us TED Talks, and he showed us one on D&D this Wednesday. And it's an ethics class, so this DM got up there and said, you know, people think Dungeons and Dragons are like nerds playing in their basement and we just want to like be violent and like destroy cities, but no, we are exercising all these ethical principles and moral reasoning, you know, much more than what y'all were doing. We're talking about how like they'll you're playing these fantasy games, and he said that his players will like talk for hours and deliberate on like whether or not to open this door for this person because of all the consequences it will have on the society and, you know, what that ethical decision will affect. So what do you guys think about D&D and its moral reasoning?
I wish I had players who thought that deeply about their decision. Yeah. Most of my players are like, I can open the door.
Yeah.
Kill this dude.
I'll kick that door down, please.
But I do love, like, D&D does give you the space. And I definitely try to throw ethical quandaries into my campaigns. D&D, one of the biggest, like, things ingrained into the D&D system, and you were asking before the episode about the alignment chart, which a lot of you probably know.
Let's do that for what you're reading.
Yeah. Ooh.
That like, what
fun.
Are you?
What's your alignment?
But so to explain, a lot of you have probably seen this in like memes or something like that. people like to use it as a template. If you've seen the like 3x3 grid of lawful good, lawful evil, chaotic good, chaotic evil, and neutral. All throughout that is the D&D alignment chart. It started in D&D.
Yes.
And people are kind of having their way with it, which is really fun. But it's a very interesting way of developing kind of the ethical basis for your character. Is your character like lawful good in that they'll do everything expected of them by society and they'll be kind to others and they'll be like, if you know, like a paladin archetype that like commonly is like a lawful good character. But there's also like chaotic good, like Robin Hood, who's like breaking social structures and social conventions, but is like being good to others, being kind, being considerate, and giving. But then there's also like lawful evil, which is like working within a society, but like has like an evil aspect. If any of you have seen or like Les Mis, like I like Javert as an example, lawful evil, because he follows the law. He's literally a cop, but he's not cruel.
A good guy.
He just harms people through his strict like adherence to the law. Yeah. Lots of like
he's
Sith
enforcing the law, but the law itself isn't necessarily good.
Exactly, yeah. And it's not that consideration for the evil of the law. And then there's like chaotic evil, which is like wanting to break down society, wanting to watch the world burn, cool stuff like that. And there's like lots of neutral ground in that. Like nature is like true neutral because it's not necessarily good or evil.
Yeah, it's just hanging.
Yeah. But that's a really cool like ethical foundation for D&D characters. Every character is one of these 9 moves, like neutral good or neutral chaotic or something like that. So I love that idea of are you lawful evil? Are you chaotic? Yeah. Let's go around. Katie, do you have a thought?
I've taken the quiz a few times. you know, like I said, never read a Harry Potter. I've taken the house sorting quiz several times.
never played
D&D, but taken this quiz a couple times.
I'm a Hufflepuff.
Slytherin. I'm a Slytherin as well.
Ravenclaw represent.
Love that. Oh, well, got some more answers. I've gotten chaotic good twice. Ooh. I also feel like I could be chaotic neutral.
Nice.
Yeah. I have 2 answers because I think in real life, like me myself, I think that I am neutral good.
Not like too adherent to.
No, like I'm a nice person, but like I'm not like trying to, you know,
follow all the rules.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do anything.
But you're not like an anarchist.
Yeah, no.
Against that.
Exactly. But in D&D, whenever I play, I always play chaotic neutral. Because
that seems fun.
Yeah, it is. I think it's the best like placement for character building.
You would get along with a lot of my players.
Yeah. I think I'm always like some sort of like weird hybrid of like a real celebrity. Like I was like a tiefling for a while that was just like Mariah Carey as a tiefling and was like chilling.
I definitely would say that I'm neutral good. I'm actually drawn to characters who fall in the lawful spectrum. I think it's way more fun to
abide by the rules.
Yeah, I think it's more fun to build a character who abides by the rules, even if it's an evil context.
That's interesting, because a lot of my players and a lot of the people that I meet like aren't super attracted to neutral or lawful stuff because it's like boring, or it's like you don't have like lots of room or lots of fun with that. What do you like about it? What's interesting about it?
I think I think as a DM, Katie mentioned it for a second, but as a DM it's attractive just because it does make the process a little bit easier when you're talking about creating characters in structures. So obviously characters who follow those structures are going to be just a little bit easier to like flesh out and have exist with your characters,
because you know the structure than the character.
But I also think they're just more interesting in terms of character development, because when you have a character like most players would, especially first time players, would choose to play Kayak neutral because it gives them a lot of freedom. They can pretty much act
just do what you want.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I'm just here for the ride.
They don't have like ethical
restrictions,
implications to their character and like their character's history. But I think when you create a character in the context of being lawful, it like automatically gives them an ethical set to follow. I think that can make character development much more interesting because you have to follow these strict codes, and development in that is like, if you have a lawful good character and the lawful good character is like forced in a situation to act unethically and against the rules, just the impact that can have on a person is so interesting.
I am absolutely vibing with this. I do love lawful characters because of that weird interaction that they then have. Like, are they like, do they like agree with this structure 100%? Are they like, what's their relationship to it?
Yeah,
very Gryffindor attitude.
Yeah. I think that's why if I had to classify myself, I would pick lawful good. I feel like that's like sounds like the most virtuous thing, and I don't want to be like that.
Be humble, Riley.
I think like one thing that I love about lawful characters is that it's not necessarily like working within society, it's also working within like your own personal code. And as you know, as a philosophy major, I think a lot about ethics and stuff. I think I identify with lawful being like my own personal code or my own personal considerations about ethics and sticking to those things. So that's cool. That's interesting. I love the kind of mix that we have.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
I'm so glad we've gotten to touch on this topic.
Yeah.
Because we had a D&D episode, I think, a while ago, but...
Yeah, last
glad we
season.
Had, yeah, I'm glad we had some. Glad we had experts.
Really build the world up around D&D.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me.
This was so much fun.
I loved it so much.
Yeah. So that, I think, about wraps up our episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Skrull Nation, for tuning in. And we will see you next week.